Time for another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, Larry Mueller here. Glad you're with us today as we take a look at your lawn and turf with John Steyer, UW Extension horticulturist, turf research expert in the Department of Horticulture. Glad to have him along. And certainly if you have questions for him, feel free to join in. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890. Give a call. And John, snow mold. I had a little snow mold, or we had it in our lawn when I took a look after the snow got away a little bit. And I guess we're not the only lawn to
Larry, snow mold has been a big problem for us across the state this year. We usually don't see too much of it in southern Wisconsin. There are two main types, pink snow mold and gray snow mold. And pink snow mold is more common of the two. We can get pink snow mold occurring most of the year, and it's named pink snow mold because the edges of the patch are a little bit pinkish. Gray snow mold is much more rare, but that tends to occur under snow cover. This fungus can actually grow when the temperatures are hovering around freezing temperatures. The good news, Larry, is that on our lawns, although these diseases will kill the leaves, they usually don't kill the plant, and the plant should come back just fine.
I didn't do anything. I looked at it. Okay, I've got it. John's going to be on the show, and he's probably going to tell me I don't need to do anything. And that's the good news.
That is the good news.
Linda in Black Earth will give you a chance. Hi, Linda.
Hey, I wasn't expecting to be on so soon. Anyway, this year we live out here in the country, and we have tons of mounds of dirt that seem to have been dug up from underneath.
Yep.
So I'm wondering, what is that? And I noticed that a lot of other people have it worse this year, too. And
how big are the mounds, Diane?
Huh?
How big are the mounds?
They're big.
Oh, okay.
Big. A foot or more across?
A what?
A foot or more across?
No, I wouldn't say more than a foot, but I would just say on average about a foot, yeah.
And do they kind of go in a line,
yes,
or are they just single mounds?
They're in lines and patches.
Yeah. So those are some type of mole then, and the good news is there's probably no permanent damage there. The moles have tunneled underneath the ground, searching for earthworms or grubs or something to eat.
Yeah.
And moles kind of come and go. You know, you may have them one year and then not see them again for a number of years because they've moved on, and then you'll get them back again.
Right.
So to fix the problem, you can simply tamp down the moles pits, if you want, or the humps there in the soil,
And
the grass will grow back just fine. If they keep reappearing, you can actually find out which tunnels they're using, because when you tamp them down, they'll be back up the next day.
Right.
And the only way, if you really want to get rid of them, is to trap them with a harpoon trap.
Mm.
And so you find out which tunnel is active by tamping down the tunnel, and then seeing which ones get raised again the following day. Set the harpoon trap according to the directions, and that's the only tried and true method that exists, although there's lots of other remedies out there, the efficacy of which is sometimes open to question.
Right.
They're mean-looking traps, that's for sure,
but they
do the job. And frankly, I think you've mentioned this before on the show, those tunnels. One mole can make a lot of tunnels.
That's right, Larry.
To be a lot of moles out there to do a lot of damage.
That's right. The moles can tunnel pretty quick. We had a professor at our turf research center one day about 2 years ago describing the speed at which he watched a mole make a tunnel across one of our putting greens. And it was literally in minutes.
He went across the whole putting green.
Went across the putting green.
So how big are these animals?
Most of them are fairly small, maybe a third the size of your fist.
That's great.
They're pretty small.
Yeah, I'm
they're not much
like
bigger than a large
animal.
Mouse.
Okay. No. Well, thanks, guys.
Yep, thanks, Linda, for calling. Appreciate it. And Ruth in Ladysmith, you are next. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm wondering, I was out raking yesterday and wondering, how soon can I plant grass seed in up here in Ladysmith? The ground seems to be a little frozen in places still.
Yeah, and this is
we still have some snow.
And this is a lawn that's just...
It's a pretty good lawn, but there's places that need
thickening. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, this is a great question. I think one that many of the listeners will hone in on, because there's a lot of bare patches and that are showing up in people's yards for various reasons at this time of year and so forth. And right now is actually a great time to go ahead and get some seed into the ground. Outside of planting in late summer, early fall, this is the next best time to get the seed into the ground. It'll take a while to germinate because, like you said, the soil's still very cold up in your area, but it will still give a head start over the weed seeds that will germinate later on this spring. And it will enable the grass, by planting it now, to grow enough so that it should be able to avoid going into summer heat stress in a juvenile state. It'll be able to mature before summer then.
So you work that soil up a little bit? Or
yeah, Larry, you know, we just take a rake, a dirt rake, or even a hand rake, and work the soil up a little bit, sprinkle some seed in there, and then work the soil up a little bit so we have good seed-to-soil contact. And if it's a small area, you know, less than a foot diameter or so, that should be good. If you have large areas, 20, 30 square feet or more, you might want to sprinkle a little bit of hay or straw or even grass clippings on there to cover up about 50% of the surface so that those seeds don't wash away and so that they germinate very well. And it'll probably take 3 to 4 weeks to germinate at this point. But that'll still give them a heads up on any weed seeds.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling, Ruth. And Daryl in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Daryl.
Good morning. I'm just calling to ask how's the best way to get rid of violets in my lawn. Mm. I've had this problem for a period of time. It seems to be increasing. What suggestions do you have?
Well, communication. Larry and I were talking about that. And I say that because I remember a show I did several years ago here with Larry where a fellow had tried an herbicide, and that seemed to work, but then he noticed the violets were coming back, and it was only later on that he found out his wife was planting them. So communication is always important.
That's not your problem, okay.
No. If that's not the problem, the most effective way to eliminate the violets is to use a broadleaf herbicide, especially if you can find one that contains the active ingredient triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R, in it. So that's really the best way. Usually two applications are going to be needed. You can do one later on this spring, maybe the end of April or so, and then again when the violets are in bloom in May or June, and that will usually do the trick. The best time is actually in the fall, but since we have a number of months to wait for that opportunity, then you might look at two applications this spring.
Okay, and then again, if that doesn't do the job, hit them again in the fall then?
That's right.
Okay. And it's triclopyr?
Triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R, is the active ingredient that you really want, although sometimes it's hard to find. And the broadleaf herbicides that are on the market will usually do a fairly good job as long as they're properly applied. So follow the label directions. Don't put down more than the label says to. Wear your gloves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You have a shady lawn, by the way?
No.
No.
Not really. But
yeah, Larry asked that because we usually find shade in association with the violets.
No, not really.
So, All right. Some people like them.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks for calling. I've got a few in the lawn. I live with them. They're kind of pretty.
Yeah,
so
I've got a few in my shadier areas, and I just leave them.
Yeah. I can live with them.
They are the state flower.
Mike in Milwaukee. That's right. I'd forgotten that. Mike in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I've just bought like a corn gluten, you know, pre-emergent, you know, like natural. And
yep.
I was just wondering what time I should put it on the grass.
Mm-hmm.
The corn gluten meal contains two small proteins in it that are very water-soluble and degrade very quickly. So you really want to put it on about 2 weeks before the crabgrass germinates.
Or dandelions or...
Well, if the dandelions are already there, it's not going to stop them. And what dandelions do is the leaves essentially disintegrate over the winter, and the roots there. And the corn gluten will not stop the plant from growing back from an existing dandelion root. It only really stops weed seeds or I should say any seed, including grass seed, from germinating. So with that said, where are you calling from?
Milwaukee,
okay. We'd like to see you put it on when the soil temperatures at a 4-inch depth get to about 45 degrees.
Okay. And that is usually, well, it's hard to say.
Well, in Milwaukee, it's usually going to be sooner than it is here in Madison. Madison, I would say end of April to put the corn gluten on. So in your area, I'd probably say another 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for calling. And on to Richard in Waupaca. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I got a related question to that last caller. I had the what kind of crabgrass last year, and so I've got a lot of patches of bare ground now, and I plan to seed it. How long before I put a pre-emergent on do I need to put that seed on so that the pre-emergent won't have an effect on that seed?
You would need to really have a couple months' growth to be absolutely safe. You could probably get by with about 3 to 4 weeks of growth after those seeds have germinated, and you may kill some of them. But, you know, that really kind of puts you out of the race for this year. Even if you put seed down tomorrow and it germinates in 3 weeks, you wouldn't really be able to put the pre-emergent down until probably late May at the earliest. That may be too late. Now, there is another option. There's one pre-emergent herbicide that you can use safely at the time of seeding. It's not as good as the other pre-emergents, but it is relatively safe for turf grass seed. And that is a product that will have the active ingredient Siduron, S-I-D-U-R-O-N. S-I-D-U-R-O-N is the active ingredient that you want. Very difficult to find. A few garden centers carry it. When we've looked around Madison, we found one that carried it in the past. But that you can apply right at the time of seeding, and it won't harm the grass seed, but it will stop weeds from coming up.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Richard.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, we finally have some open lines again. You can get on at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, talking lawn and turf care with John Steyer. And Patty in Fox Cities, you're next. Hi, Patty.
Hi, thanks. I wonder if you could make a recommendation for filling some ruts that were created by some heavy equipment that was brought into our yard for well drilling. And this is covering a pretty sizable area. And even though it was kind of, I don't know if you want to say backfilled or whatever, as the equipment was pulled out, a lot of the area with the ruts has kind of got a sandy or real light material in it. And I'm worried if I'm just adding soil on top of that and planting it with grass seed, that it's just going to continue to, you know, kind of settle into those ruts. And do I need to bring some type of equipment in here to do like a little scraping off the top? Would that be, you know, the just kind of easiest way to go? I'm sure it's not the cheapest, but give me some alternatives here.
Yeah, we can work on this on a couple levels. The absolute ideal thing to do, because that those ruts have probably compacted the soil underneath, the absolute best thing to do would be to bring in a core aerator, an aerifier, if you will, which you can either rent from a number of hardware stores or call up a landscape contractor to have them come out and do it. And that might cost you $150-$200 if you have somebody come out and do it for you.
Probably about $50 if you rent it.
Probably about $50 if you can rent it.
And
that's
then
right.
Where would I be running that machine if I'm handling that? In the rut area or
in the,
around
in the rut areas, although if you want to do your whole lawn, since you know, you're going to have it for a day or so anyways, you can do your whole lawn with it, and it wouldn't hurt the lawn. It would probably help. But definitely go do it in the rutted areas, probably 2 or 3 passes. And then you'll probably need to fill in the ruts with some soil. And ideally, you want to try to get a soil that matches the soil type that you have there, whether it's sandy or whether it's a silt loam, or whether it's an organic soil, such as this black dirt that people bring
in. Well, typically, everything is like clay in this area. However, from the well drilling and what was extracted from the ground during that process, it's kind of very sandy and light, you know?
Okay. Well, putting sand on top of clay will actually help the drainage very well. So that's not a big problem
okay,
in my
so
eyes.
Okay, so I shouldn't try to remove that at all.
So I wouldn't, no. I wouldn't necessarily try to remove that. You don't want it to be straight sand, so if you can mix a little bit of the existing soil in there, you should be fine.
Uh-huh.
All right, good luck.
Okay, thank you much.
Yep, thanks much for calling. John Starr, UW Extension horticulturist, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to be able to think about spring and talk about lawns and plants. John Steyer, our guest, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you with us. Get a lawn question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Jane in Madison, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm actually about 3 miles out of town on the west side of Madison, and
okay.
we have a huge yard, three-quarter acre, and we, starting last summer, have Creeping Charlie moving in.
Mm-hmm.
Any suggestions?
Yeah, Creeping Charlie's a perennial broadleaf weed, so it's oftentimes very difficult to remove because it spreads by stolons, which are these above-ground creeping stems, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Couple options. Some people like to try to hand remove it if it's a small patch. You just have to make sure that you get the stolons. Otherwise, it just becomes an ongoing activity that you plan on doing every month or two. The other option is to use a broadleaf herbicide and make probably two applications. Again, like the wild violets that we talked about earlier today, the best time to treat it is actually in the fall. Otherwise, we're looking at probably two applications this spring, doing an application. It's too cold now still. I would wait probably about 3 to 4 weeks when the temperatures warm up and it can actually absorb the herbicide better. And then again when it goes into bloom, which will be in late May.
Okay.
And if you make two applications according to the label directions, then that should knock out 90% or more of it.
Yeah, with a three-quarter acre yard, I was hand-picking it, and then I was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and if you just pick the leaves off and not the stems, and the stems just continue to grow.
Yeah, great. Thank you
okay.
so much.
Yep, thanks, Jane. Ron in Milwaukee, hello to you.
Good morning.
Morning.
You're talking about getting rid of violets and other kind of things, they're trying to get rid of them. I'm just trying to talk about bluebells and trying to get them under control. They're also very invasive, and they migrated from across the alley, and then we've had them, and we like them when they're in bloom.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
If they would just stay in one place, but they keep migrating. Are they a root under the ground, or is it seed spread?
I think that's going to be seed-borne. I've never had a question on bluebells in the lawn before. Get lots of good questions today. But I would suspect they'd be very easily controlled if you wanted to use an herbicide. Otherwise, just keep mowing them, and some of them will probably stay short enough in the yard that they'll be there. But
or keep going around pulling them.
Or that's certainly another option. But my guess is that the seed is being dispersed throughout the site.
Yeah. Well, they're nice. There's a fence along the alley, chain link, and it's nice to have them on the outside, on the alley side.
Yeah.
Because it blends,
yep.
But they just go other places. I've got a rear yard, middle yard, and a front yard, and they've gone a little bit into the middle yard, and hopefully they don't go in a corner lot.
Yep.
They haven't gone, I haven't recalled seeing them in the tree borders, but I certainly don't want them going in the front yard or the tree borders, but it would be nice to control them in some way other than manually.
Yeah, well, mowing will be a good option for them.
Well, those along the alley, of course.
Yeah.
You can't mow them. I mean, they're right between where the concrete of the alley and the fence.
Yeah, those you just leave then.
Okay, but the other ones just mow and then they'll keep going.
They're annual plants.
Daisies in that same category?
Are daisies in that same category?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay, but. There was a time that when my son was home and doing grass mowing, he would leave them. And occasionally, when I get a soft heart when I'm doing the grass now, I mow around them. So you know, here I've got wildflowers, if you will,
yep,
in my lawn. But.
Yeah, the most important time to mow them is when they're starting to go to flower, so they can't produce more seeds because those seeds will spread.
Okay, very good.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. And Randy in Minneapolis, we'll go to you now. Hi, Randy.
Good morning.
Morning.
Just happened to be driving down to Madison with the station. And question, I did some landscaping last fall, and I've got some areas. I put some black dirt in around the house and some bricks. Can I use with lawn patchwork over on new dirt or not?
Yeah, you can do that. I assume the lawn patch that you're talking about is going to be a mixture of seed and some paper mulch.
But does that work for this, or is it best to use straw and things like that instead?
In all of our studies that we've ever done, straw mulch has always worked best.
Okay.
But sometimes it's just more convenient to use the lawn patch, and it's not that much better. Straw is great. The lawn patch will work good.
And then I have one other question. We have a yard that's about 10 years old now, and we've got areas when we had sodded it originally, this, like, I don't think there's a lot of soil. It's very sandy up where we live in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And to reseed it now, and you had talked about like just raking it and then spreading the seed and then come back and raking again. What
yep.
about mixing any topsoil with it? Would that help at all?
If it's a really sandy soil, if you can mix a little bit of topsoil in, it's actually better to rake it in or rototill it into that sand. You don't need much. 5 to 10% soil by volume in a sand will give it the water retaining and nutrient retaining characteristics of a much heavier soil.
And I can do that now, do you think, already? Or?
Now would be a great time to do it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling, Randy. And Margo in Mayville. Good morning.
Good morning. We're living in a house that we're renting, and the grass didn't get cut in the fall. So it's very long now, and it's like it's matted, and it's long and yellowish and green and really ugly. So we don't know whether we should try and mow it now, and so that, you know, the air and the sun can get to the grass underneath, or what we should do.
Yep, good question. So my recommendation, because you don't want to scalp the grass, you want to give it some leaf material to actually help recover from,
mm-hmm.
would be to set your mower at the highest setting and go out and mow it. And if it leaves too many clippings on the lawn, you'll have to rake those up and compost them.
Okay.
Otherwise, if it doesn't leave too many clippings on the lawn, if you can still see the grass underneath coming up through,
mm-hmm.
then you can just let the cuttings decompose.
Okay.
And then probably in 2 weeks, set the mower a little bit lower and mow it again. And that should be close to what your final mowing height would be about 2.5 to 3.5 inches.
Okay.
If you set your mower at the highest setting, it'll probably be about 4 inches.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Margo. And on to Bob in Oshkosh. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Larry. The question I have for your guest is, when is the best time to put weed and feed or a fertilizer down to kill the weeds? My wife and I moved into a house. We live in Hortonville, and the yard was existing already when we moved in, but had lots of dandelions. And my wife told me that I should be doing this in the fall, and like most husbands, that kind of didn't get done, and I had other things to do, called deer hunting. But anyways, what would you recommend? Put it on now, or wait till the fall again, which probably won't get done again this year?
Yeah, I am almost thinking that we need some urban deer that prefer to eat dandelions out of yards, maybe. Best of both worlds there. Putting down a weed and feed at this time, the fertilizer-type products are probably not going to be very effective on the dandelions, especially at this time of the year. It's just too early for them to work. I find that if we really want to control dandelions, a standalone product is going to be much better, usually a liquid application. And that can be spot-treated where the individual dandelions are sprayed, which reduces the amount that we actually put out in the environment if we do a broadcasting method.
Okay.
But I would wait. Springtime will work pretty good. You may get 70-80% control with a liquid application if you do it around mid to late May.
Okay.
late summer, early autumn, or even mid-autumn is still the best time to do it, though. You'll get pretty much 100% kill. So,
okay.
You know, you don't have to tell your wife I said that if you don't want to.
As long as she's not listening. And what do you recommend for this liquid application, like Roundup or something? Or?
No, Roundup will kill everything.
Okay.
It'll kill the grass as well as the weed. So use a broadleaf herbicide.
Okay.
Don't buy anything that says grass and weed killer or anything like that. You want something that is only for broadleaf weeds.
Okay, sounds good. I will definitely do that. Because then I'll be on her good side for deer hunting. Then.
There you go.
That's right.
Okay, thank you very much. Larry, I listen to you every day.
Oh, thanks, Bob. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I fished on your lake quite a few times when I used to live in that area. So have a good one, guys.
Have a good one. It's a good lake for fishing. There's no doubt about that. Leslie in Merrimack, your turn. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. I'm calling actually on behalf of our condo association. Our building of 8 condos is perched in the Baraboo Bluffs, and they put holding tank septic systems in for us. And we're hoping to create what we're calling now our septic garden, to put something on top of those big concrete things that they had to blast out of the rock.
Mm-hmm.
They covered it with some soil of some sort, and I'm getting two different conflicting sets of suggestions. One, that I have to put sand down before I put topsoil down, and the next is just put the topsoil down and put a barrier up of some kind so the stuff doesn't go sliding down the bluff. The first question, I guess, is about the sand. Do we need to do that, or what's your best recommendation?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think I would almost have to seek the advice of a septic tank consultant, because I don't know if there are stability or erosion control issues here.
Ah.
And so maybe that's why that recommendation was made.
And are you talking actually about the roots of the plants that we might put on it, or you're talking about the soil or both?
Well, right now I'm thinking more of soil stability and Department of Natural Resource regulations.
Ah.
And I don't know those for septic tanks, unfortunately.
Okay, particularly from a
grass standpoint, it really doesn't matter.
Okay. That's good to know, and I appreciate your suggestion, because we abut Parfrey's Glen, which is a pretty special area in Wisconsin, so we want to make sure that we're responsible
for that. The DNR has very, very well-defined wetland and shoreline protection rules.
Okay.
And I'm sure they'd be happy to help you out and provide you with the proper guidance there.
Wonderful. That will be the next call. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Call your county DNR.
And I think a lot of times native prairie plants are put over those kinds of systems, if I'm not mistaken, just because their roots go down and they hold the soil. And anyway, Leslie,
yep,
you'll find out.
That's right. That might be a good option for them, too, and reduce their maintenance perhaps at the same time.
Yep. Rodney in Milwaukee, hello to you.
Hi. I was going to ask about, I used to get the lawn care service. The reason I stopped, because they were always coming out and always coming out. And I think they always did a good job, but I'm just wondering, am I wasting my money, or are they really, like, I wanted to switch to, like, this between Scotts and True Green. Are they really any different?
Well, there are differences between lawn care companies. Most of the larger ones have in-house training programs, you tend to get more well-trained people, although I will say that there's a number of small mom-and-pop type companies out there that people are also well-trained. Now, by the same token, we can find poorly skilled people in any occupation, too, so it's a little bit hit or miss. I generally like to suggest that people consider hiring somebody who is a member of one of the very many lawn care or green industry associations, such as the Wisconsin Green Industry Foundation or LAWN, which is the Land Association of Wisconsin Network, or Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association or something like that, because that right there shows a certain degree of professionalism.
Mm-hmm. And what about, she raises a good question about the number of times that a company may come. Is it possible to actually have fewer visits from a company like
that? Yeah, and that's a good question, because as we get more environmentally friendly in our landscaping caretaking, Larry, we're finding that oftentimes it's more environmentally helpful or environmentally friendly to make more visits just to check on things and to nip little problems in the bud, so to speak, no pun intended, before they get to be a big problem.
Okay.
And so, you know, we have this mindset here where we're trying to be environmentally friendly and reduce reliance on pesticides and so forth, but that will require many more trips, actually, than, you know, one or two or three or four times a year.
Okay. One more question. There's a, I don't know what they call it, it's thatching the lawn.
Thatching.
Thatching the lawn.
Thatching the lawn. Now, what's that, the difference between aeration? Because we get the aeration, and then there's the that, you know, because our grass needs to be raked really bad, but I don't know if we just regular rake or come out and, I don't know, thatch the grass.
Very, very good question. Certain types of grasses, like Kentucky bluegrass, can in some cases produce lots of thatch, which is a layer of living and dead organic material between what you see on the top of the lawn and the soil underneath. And if it gets real puffy, then that's a great place for diseases and insect pests to live and so forth. And then if it gets real bad, when we mow it, we tend to scalp it. And so thatching is really more appropriately called dethatching, because we'll use a power rake and actually remove a lot of that stuff. I usually don't recommend dethatching because it exposes too much soil, and then we actually end up getting more weeds. What I like to do better is find out why we have the thatch there, which is usually related to compaction, and then I recommend aerifying, which it sounds like they have already done in the past, and so I would keep that practice up.
Keep that going.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. And Sue in Milwaukee, we turn to you now. Hi, Sue.
Hi there. I have some questions about probably wasted grass seed. Can you overseed a lawn?
Certainly, we can overseed lawns. In fact, I think as we get more environmentally friendly, we're going to find that overseeding lawns is a great way to reduce reliance on herbicides and some other pesticides. And so if somebody has bare patch in the lawn, then that's very easy to broadcast overseed, as we've talked about already today on the show, just taking a rake and raking some seed into those bare patches. But even a lawn that's thin, as long as it's getting proper fertilizer, we can go in there with what's called a slit seeder. And these can also be rented from hardware stores and so forth. And some of them are very small, whereas so one person can easily manipulate these things. But they act very much like a farmer's drill for soybeans. You put the seed in a hopper box up on top of the unit, and then the unit cuts furrows into the lawn, and the seed drops down in the furrows. That's a great way to get seed to soil contact, a great way to get seed in the soil, and a great way to thicken up a lawn.
So you don't have to worry about doing the raking thing you were talking about if you use that machine.
Exactly. You just want to make sure that the discs are cutting deep enough so that they're going into the top half inch of soil. We've had failures where people's didn't set the discs low enough and they weren't actually cutting any furrows into the soil, and then the seeding doesn't work.
Well, and what I actually meant, I understood what you were saying about overseeding, but what I meant was, can you put too much seed down?
Oh, can you put too much seed down? If you're putting so much seed down that you're getting two or three or more layers of seed on top of each other, that would be too much.
But that's still an awful lot. I mean,
that is still an awful lot. We usually want about 10 to 15 seeds per square inch. If that helps put it in perspective for you. Take 10 or 15 seeds and put them on a square inch of paper, and you'll be able to get a good feeling for how much seed you should have.
But I wouldn't even have to worry about that using the machine, because the machine probably does it automatically.
That's correct. You can oftentimes on the machines you can set the rate, and so for Kentucky bluegrass they'll have a setting, for perennial ryegrass and fescue they'll have a different setting because they're larger seeds.
And so that's where you get lawns that look different. Like, I should find out what kind of lawn what kind of grass is on my lawn to begin with.
That's
so
right.
I get the same type.
And your county extension agent can probably tell you what type of lawn grass you have now.
Okay. Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your help.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. In my daughter's preschool, there's a little area that has sort of been roped off, and it's a little hill, but there's a lot of trees around, and they're wondering about some grass that'll be tough but still handle the shade, and it's pretty shady. It's so the red fescues.
Yep. Well, the red fescues and the other fine fescues are oftentimes a good choice for a shaded, dry situation like that. But if there's going to be kids playing on it, the fine fescues don't handle the traffic very well. But since it's a hill, Larry, I'm going to assume it's
like
fairly well
bump.
Drained.
Yeah.
And so tall fescue, which is a thicker grass, will actually be probably the best choice for you there.
I'll have to write that down.
That can be seeded this spring. It germinates fairly quickly. And, by the time school gets done in June or whatever, it should be a very nice turf for them, and that should survive there very nicely for them.
All right. On to Cheryl in Johnson Creek now. Hi, Cheryl.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an issue with grubs. They did quite a bit of damage in my yard last year. What do you recommend?
Yeah, grubs are a humdinger of a problem because they're kind of like moles. You're never sure if they're going to hit in the same spot twice. Sometimes they will, sometimes they won't.
Right.
So what I recommend, and sometimes a little bit difficult to do, is the beetles lay their eggs in the summer. And if you see the beetles flying around, probably Japanese beetles would be the ones to worry about, perhaps May or June beetles, which are larger green insects. The Japanese beetles are kind of a coppery-colored beetle, about half to three-quarters of an inch long. If you see them flying around in June and July, you can probably feel pretty sure that they've laid eggs in the lawn and that the grubs will start feeding on the turf roots in late July and August. And that's the time to treat them, because if we put down an insecticide at a different time of the year, we're probably not going to have much effect on them, and then we're essentially putting the insecticide down for no reason.
Okay.
So late July, August is the time period to treat for them, but I don't recommend treating unless you expect there to be a problem. There's a couple extension bulletins at the University of Wisconsin website which describe the grubs and show some pictures of them. So you can get those either from your county extension office or look at the University of Wisconsin Extension website.
Okay. And do they appear as moths at first?
Do they appear as moths? No, they do not. There are some other types of insect pests like sod webworm which do appear as moths. And they don't eat the turf roots, but the moths fly around at nighttime, and they drop their eggs randomly around the lawn. And then the worms hatch, and they make a little burrow into the soil, which they'll line with silk or webbing, if you will. And then they come out at night, and they chew the grass around that hole.
That sounds more of like what I have.
Okay, so then what you want to do is look at the sod webworm extension bulletin or fact sheet.
That sounds exactly like what I have. Very
okay.
good.
The moths will be kind of a tan colored.
And they do eat in a round pattern.
Yep.
Okay.
It's either that or it could be cutworms. And cutworms are going to be black worms. The sod webworms are kind of tan.
No, I've definitely seen the tan. I think you've identified it for me.
Okay.
Is that also treating in July?
Is that also treated in July? You know, I'm not an insect expert, and unfortunately, I'm going to have to pass on that question.
Okay.
It looks like Larry's pulled up the fact sheet here online.
I haven't quite got it yet, but I'll have it soon.
Okay.
So,
stay listening.
But that would be a good place to go to.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. John Steyer, UW Extension horticulturist, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in with your own lawn or turf question, feel free at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. A couple open lines, we'll get you on. And let's go to Helen in Wyoega next. Helen, hello.
Hello. It's good to be able to ask you a question.
Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you. It's an ant question. We have an infestation, we think, in a wall that the roof has been leaking into. And all of a sudden, in the house, at random places, we're finding big black ants or small black ants, and then they have wings on the ant. Mm-hmm. We also had last fall, it looked like a whole hatching of ants with wings outside our home.
Mm-hmm.
And we're wondering what we can use to control.
I think these are going to be carpenter ants. And my recommendation, if they're in the house like that, if you're finding winged individuals in the house, they are actually breeding in the house. And at this point, you want to call a professional pest control operator to take them out.
Okay.
Because what they oftentimes get their start in a tree nearby the house, and then they move on into the house. And it's not uncommon to find individuals walking around at a house, but that doesn't mean you have an infestation. But if you're finding winged individuals in the house, that means they're actually hatching in the house.
Okay.
And you don't want that, because they will chew through the wood pretty good.
And they're going to look for, the pest control people are going to look for wet areas or damaged wood, because they really don't go after new wood or wood that's in good condition.
Right.
They're always after rotting wood. And so you may have a spot, maybe in the sink or, you know, under the sink or someplace where the wood's gotten a little wet, and that's the perfect, perfect spot. So good luck, Helen. Thanks. Susan in Oconomowoc, your turn.
Hi. Thanks for talking to me. I've got a pond, an acre pond, and I've got about 5 acres of grass. And our lawn, our grass area is in desperate need of some fertilizer, and we've been afraid to put fertilizer down because we don't want it running into the pond, but right now we don't have much of a lawn left. So I know we need to do it, and I guess I'm wondering what's the best kind of fertilizer to use, when to use it, and I was interested in the slit seeding question, if, you know, maybe I should be slit seeding because the lawn really is looking pretty bad, and if I could do that and fertilize at the same time.
Yep. Great questions. So my first recommendation would be to get a soil test.
Okay.
And you can contact or look at the Extension website again for there's a fact sheet called Soil Sampling for Lawn and Gardens. And that will tell you how to do it. You don't need any specialized equipment. You can use a hand trowel if you want. And then send that in to either the University of Wisconsin Soil Testing Lab, or there's a number of private labs around, because you want to find out what the levels of phosphorus are in your soil. Because if you have enough phosphorus, there's no need to add any more. If the soil is lacking in phosphorus, you'll need to have a fertilizer that contains phosphorus.
Okay.
Okay, does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And so essentially what we would encourage you to do is apply 3 to 4 pounds of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet per year. So you said this is about 5 acres?
Yes.
So what is that, about 200 and some thousand square feet? So you're probably looking at maybe 200 pounds of nitrogen a year for that site. I'm sorry, per application for that site, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you buy a bag that says 25-3-4, that's going to be 25% nitrogen. So you'll need about 4 bags. So you may actually need about 800 pounds of fertilizer then, if my math is right.
Okay.
Okay, for that large of an area. But it will depend on how much nitrogen is actually in those bags. We find that nitrogen is usually the limiting nutrient, although if this has never had any fertilizer, or at least not for a number of years, it may be deficient in phosphorus, and that's why the grass is not very thick. And the nitrogen can't do its job if the phosphorus isn't there. As far as the runoff goes, what we find is that as long as we don't put the fertilizer in the water, it should be okay. We don't want to put the fertilizer in the water, and don't apply the fertilizer if the soil is frozen or saturated.
Oh.
Okay, because if it's saturated, then the fertilizer has no place to go except in runoff.
Okay.
But otherwise, if we apply it to a soil, it might be moist soil, but if we apply it to a soil, we get some rain, the fertilizers, the nutrients in them, bind very quickly to the soil and to the plants.
Okay.
Okay. So what people sometimes will do, and it's not a bad idea just to be on the safe side, is leave an untreated buffer strip, maybe 10 feet wide, around your pond where you don't fertilize that area.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Now, we've got a little beach area before the grass.
Oh, yeah. So, okay.
So
obviously, you're not going to fertilize that anyways.
No, I'm just worried because we've got a downhill slope to our lawn, and it goes right down to the pond.
Yep.
So what type of fertilizer? I mean, in terms of, we don't want like granulator or slow release. We want something that goes right away, right?
Right.
I mean,
you really want a water soluble nitrogen source on there. And so the water soluble nitrogen sources. Do you have a pen?
Yes.
Okay. You're going to want to look for something that says urea.
Okay.
Or ammoniacal nitrogen, and I'll spell that for you: A M M O N I A C A L nitrogen.
Okay.
Or you might find something that says potassium nitrate, P-O-T-A-S-S-I-U-M, nitrate.
Yep.
Those will be the most common types of water-soluble nitrogen that you'll find.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thanks for the help.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And Deb in Arcadia, your turn now. Hi, Deb.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I just have a comment or probably a tip for the caller who had the ground mole problem.
Yeah.
What I do is when I see activity in those mounds, I tamp them down and I watch for more activity. And when I see that there's some activity there, I take a garden hose and run it in that tunnel and turn the water on full blast. And it doesn't take long, and that mole is coming up fighting for air.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I get a lot of my ground moles.
Huh? Well, that's certainly one way to approach it.
Yeah, then you know you got the mole.
Yep. Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Deb.
Thank you for the tip.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. And Daryl in Hillsboro, also with a comment, I think, about moles. Daryl, hi.
Hi. I think I'm going to have to go out and buy some more garden hose. My question today is, I went out in the yard, our front part of our yard, and there just seems to be like a mole village that has, I don't know, I didn't notice it last fall.
Yep.
But as you walk on the ground, it's almost like it's spongy.
Yep.
And, you know, and just whole different kinds of areas. And is it all the grass, is that going to be dead, or is there anything I need to do as far as...
The grass should be fine. It'll grow back just fine. You can simply tamp down those mole trails, and the grass will recover just fine. The moles actually have aerated the soil underneath, so sometimes we actually get a little bit better grass growth than those old mole trails. But the bigger issue here is if the moles are still active in the lawn,
right?
And if those trails are going to come back.
Okay.
So now we have two options, either the harpoon trap or you can flood them out.
Yeah. Okay.
Have a baseball bat handy.
Okay, well, just in time for spring training, huh?
Yeah. Thanks, Daryl.
Okay, thank you.
And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. We've got all open lines here, so we'll get you on really fast. John Steyer, our guest today, if an area receives less than 4 hours of sun a day, or maybe it's located under the canopy of a tree, are there alternatives to grasses, John, that you recommend?
Yeah, Larry, that's always a great question. If a site is not getting more than 4 to 6 hours of sunlight a day and it's densely shaded, lawn grasses are usually not the best option or even a good option to plant there. And so what we usually recommend is that people look to either non-living ground cover like a wood or stone mulch there, or if they want plants there to look at some of the shade-tolerant broadleaf plants that are listed on my growing grass and shade extension bulletin. On the back there, there's a long list, and garden centers will have many more.
Jody in Downing, your turn. Hi, Jody.
Hi, I'm calling in. First, I'd want to thank you for talking about the chemicals you're using in a safer way, but I'm encouraging people to look at their lawns in a different way and forget about using the especially the herbicides and also a lot of the chemical fertilizers. I do landscape gardening for a living, and I do it completely naturally, organically, and it can be done. And, you know, the violets are beautiful. The dandelions are beautiful. So I'm just putting a plug in. We live where our lakes are completely polluted from the runoff.
Mm-hmm. I thank you very much for calling. We'll have a chance to comment on that. We'll take a look at the news next, and then we'll give John a chance to think about that and comment on it. John Steyer, UW Extension horticulturist, our guest on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking lawn and turf care today with John Steyer, UW Extension horticulturist. Glad to have you listening in. John, as we broke for news, one caller called in and wondered about chemicals use in lawn and trying to eliminate or at least cut way back on it and, you know, leave the violets there and some of the other things. And I think to some extent you agree with that.
Yeah, I think that we, as a society, Larry, are taking a much closer look at what we eat, where the food comes from, and even how we're taking care of our landscapes. We held a two-day workshop for lawn care companies a couple weeks ago here in Madison on organic lawn care. And I see a lot of companies now, even some of the larger companies, the conventional lawn care companies, starting to offer these types of programs and so forth. So I think this is something that we're moving to. I always like people to think very long and hard about this. One of the issues, for example, is people push for an organic lawn care regulations or law or something. If we look at the Food Protection Act. In the Organic Food Production Act of 1990, that act, for example, says that we can't use any genetically modified materials in order to be organic. Well, if we want to use something like corn gluten meal on our lawns so that we don't have to use a synthetic chemical, we use a natural chemical instead, well, most of our corn gluten is from genetically modified corn. So we really need to think about these things very carefully. The other problem that we run into is a lot of the, almost all of the organic or natural fertilizer products have a very low nitrogen to phosphorus ratio. And so with the synthetic products, we can oftentimes, it's much easier to produce and use a phosphorus-free product, which mm-hmm. is very desirable in some cases. So it's an interesting thing, and I think we're moving towards it, but we want to do it very carefully. And so I certainly appreciate the listener's comments on that.
Ken in Maquonigo, your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hi, good afternoon, actually.
Yeah.
And thank you much for fielding my inquiry. a little bit of background, and then I'll be specific about my question. Built in a new subdivision in Maquonigo about 4 years ago, and the following summer put in, used a high-profile landscape company to put in my entire landscaping, and including apparently putting in very expensive sod, about 10,000 square feet of sod. And for the first summer, now the sod was laid over a pod of compressed material that the house was built on. We actually have 3 acres of which almost all of it is in a wetlands conservancy as designated by the DNR, although it's entirely dry, but it is a conservancy. And so our house, because the street level was higher, was built on a compressed surface pod. But of course, 3 to 5 inches of topsoil was laid on that before the sod was laid. The first, and we used one of these companies that brings in the automatic sprinkler system. So it was on a very regulated basis for the first 3 weeks, computerized basis. It got an enormous amount of water. And for the first summer, it was absolutely staggeringly gorgeous. I mean, it was a Scott's turf picture. Winter came along, and as soon as spring came along, the lawn didn't grow well, and essentially 50% of it had kind of browned out. Not apparently looking dead, but had kind of browned out. So we watered it and kind of lived with it that summer, and then aerated it that fall, and I got concerned. So I actually sent to the UW Extension. I took three different soil samplings from around the property, and sent in for a soil testing, and got a nice report back that said, well, your pH is this, and your system is that, and if you were to fertilize, this is what you should do. And we went to a high-profile nursery here and bought not just your Scotts or whatever, bought a very high-profile, very specific composition fertilizer and put it on that fall as well as aerated. Now, we're into spring again, and it's come up. Oh, I also called the landscape company, who then referred me to the turf builder, and they said, well, you have to understand, your grass is a new variety, and it's very slow growing, to the point where you only probably need to cut it two or three times a summer. And I said, okay, I never heard of that, but I can understand that maybe something like that is out there. And this spring has now come along, and now I didn't do anything this last fall. I didn't aerate again, and I did not put the fertilizer again, thinking I'll just let it be. And spring's along, the snow's off, and pretty much it's just the same brown. Now, the only clue I might have to why it could be greener is we have a sump pump drain that comes out of the back area, and when in heavy rains and when the snow falls, the sump pump often works for a few days and puts out a lot of water in a specific area, and then the lawn really greens up just in that specific area. Is it entirely possible that I need to just overwater this, or what I would think to be overwatering? I have the one-inch gauge. We go out there. We do the one-inch of watering, every week. We try to do that kind of maintenance.
What kind of grass do you have? What do you have? What is the grass that this new type of grass?
I'm sorry, I don't know that. I can't be specific about
the type.
Either the name of the grass or the blend or
anything. I think that there may be several issues here. One would be the type of grass that you actually have. Another issue would be the rooting depth of the grass that was put down. If the soil is really compacted underneath that 3 to 5 inches of topsoil that they brought in, and if it's really only 3 inches of topsoil, then it's a bigger problem than if they brought in 5 inches of topsoil. Because when you water 1 inch of water, you have to think about where is that water going. And if the soil is compacted just underneath the surface, much of that water may actually be not penetrating very deeply, and it's just kind of running off, but running off not from the surface, but on the subsurface. And so the grass really doesn't have access to most of that water you may be putting down.
Yes, and I think that happens. And the reason I say that is where there is sloping, oftentimes where there's sloping, for instance, from the house down to the sidewalk, basically the water just runs underneath the grass and floods the sidewalk.
Yeah. So I think, probably continued aeration to try to break through that compacted layer and let the turf root deeper so it can be a more efficient user of water is going to be a good way to go. And I would aerate maybe a couple times each spring and a couple times each fall for maybe a couple, 3 years until you can go out there with a shovel and pull up the sod and see that it's rooting, 5-6 inches deep into that compacted layer. I would also find out what type of grass you have, and I would follow the extension recommendations for otherwise mowing, fertilizing, and watering that grass.
Yeah, but get out there this spring and get to work on the lawn then to sort of loosen it up of that subsurface.
You may also want to contact a professional. Again, I would urge you, if you do that, to contact somebody who is a member of a green industry association, because you'll get a more professional service out of them.
ironically, and this is complete irony, I'm actually driving home right now to meet one of those individuals.
Okay. Okay. Well, I hope they have good news for you. Thank you.
I turned on NPR, and there you were.
Well, that's what we're here for, to help out. Thanks, Ken. Good luck. Good luck. Pat in Mosinee, hi to you.
Hi. I would like to increase the size of my garden, so I need to remove some of the lawn area.
Yeah.
And do you have any ideas on how to kill or remove the lawn without using herbicides?
How big of an area are we talking about?
Oh, maybe 40 by 20 feet.
So you want to remove an area 40 by 20 feet?
Right.
So you've got a couple options if you don't want to use any herbicides. They're both fairly labor and or time intensive. One way is to essentially, they call it soil solarization, using the sun to heat up the soil and kill the plants. Simply put, people will oftentimes use black plastic, but actually I think clear plastic works better. You can put plastic over the area and let it heat up. That will kill the grass leaves, and if you leave it on there for several weeks, maybe a month or so, then the soil temperatures can get so hot that they actually cook the existing rhizomes, underground stems of the grass, and then you can plant later on this summer. The other option is to simply cut away, maybe down to a depth of 4 to 6 inches, cut away the soil and import some more soil and put that into the area, and then you've got to do something else with the soil that you cut out. And one way to deal with that is to let it air dry a little bit and then just simply spread it on the rest of the lawn with a shovel. Just fling it on the rest of the lawn and it'll settle in. You'll be in good shape.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Karen in Greenbush. Hello to you.
Hello, good. Beautiful day.
Yes.
My favorite show of the week.
Thank you.
I actually have two quick questions, hopefully, and one is kind of following the previous caller on soil solarization. I want to put in a new raspberry patch in an old field area that's got a lot of quack and crab, and I was thinking of, and I tilled it up last fall, but was thinking about solarizing it this spring, but also wondered about maybe planting buckwheat in there first and then tilling that in as a green manure and then solarizing. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you mentioned quack grass, and I don't think the soil solarization method is going to affect the quack grass because those rhizomes, those underground roots or stems, can be several feet down below ground, and there's just no way that will take care of it.
Okay.
So it sounds like that's probably going to be a thing that you have to live with. There may be some selective herbicides, although I don't know them for raspberries. Buckwheat, I just haven't seen people plant very much. You know, I would guess that you could plant the buckwheat there, and some quack grass will come up, but the buckwheat should compete fairly well with it. And, you know, you may have some quack grass in there, but the buckwheat will be there too. And I'm assuming that you want to use that for wildlife grazing or something like that?
Well, really just to till in as a green manure, I've heard.
Oh, okay.
And I've heard it also has some weed-killing abilities.
Yeah. The other thing with tilling is you're very likely to actually increase the number of quack grass plants there then, because as you till and cut up those rhizomes, they will tend to sprout and develop new quack grass plants. So unfortunately,
stuff.
The bad news is the only way that we really have to eliminate quack grass at this point is to use a systemic herbicide.
Okay.
There are no other natural options that I've ever seen work.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm pretty much trying to be organic, so okay. Well, that's good to know.
Oh.
And I have one other question. I live in the Kettle Moraine and have some very poor hilltop soil where our house sits, and then a red maple tree, and the grass never wants to grow there. And it's also the dog's favorite nap spot.
Mm-hmm.
So ideas for any ground cover that maybe could grow in that area and also withstand, you know, some of the dog traffic?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult to do. If it's well-drained, you can try a tall fescue.
Okay.
And that'll take some abuse.
That'll take quite a bit of abuse, Larry. We just don't like to plant tall fescue where there's any possibility of ice forming because the ice will kill it.
Okay. And that can grow in quite a bit of shade. Under
yeah, it does.
Tree.
It does very well in shade.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And John in Watertown. Hi to you.
Hi. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I've got an abundance of thatch in my yard, and I went to the rental center and looked into renting a power rake, and the blades under there look like it's going to do more damage than it is going to do good. Is there any other options for me as far as getting all that thatch out?
Well, good for you for thinking this through. I think you've hit the nail on the head. Dethatching, I don't usually recommend it because I think it does probably, in many cases, more damage than it does good. There are a few cases where if the thatch is really, really, really thick, say inch and a half, 2 or more inches, then I will reluctantly recommend dethatching the lawn. But, you know, the dethatcher is non-selective. It rips out all the good stuff as well as all the bad stuff. And if we end up leaving bare soil there, bare soil exposed, then we get weeds growing in those areas. So
yeah.
I like to figure out why is the lawn thatchy? Is it persistently wet there? Or is it compacted? Usually it's one of those two reasons that it's thatchy. And then I find the aeration over time, continued aeration in spring and fall, tends to reduce the thatch because it allows the grass to grow deeper into the soil rather than on top of the soil. And then it allows the microbes that exist in the soil to help decompose that thatch over time anyways.
Okay. So rent an aerator instead of a thatcher.
Yeah. And probably a couple times this year. I'd probably do it a couple times this spring and then a couple times in the fall. And when you do it, it's going to look very messy, but you can actually make 2 or 3 passes over your lawn each time. Because you're only going to be affecting about 5% of your lawn area each time that you do it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Jean in Rochester, Minnesota. Hello to you.
Well, good morning. I have tons of comments on this one. The corn gluten, I know a lot of people aren't going to go out and take the temperature of their soil on that. One of the hints is usually when the forsythia or the daffodils are blooming.
Yep.
Is usually about the right time to put that on, so that's an easier hint. And you talked about thatch. A lot of people think their lawn has a lot of thatch when it really isn't, but I think the hint is you're supposed to try to feel down with your finger, and if you have real hard time getting to the soil, then you have excess of thatch. But you kind of hinted at some things in this, and I'm geared towards more the organic lawn, is that the key to it is you can aerate all you want, but you need good soil biology. And if your soil's not healthy, if you don't have any microbial activity in there, your grass is not going to keep growing. And also, you know, when people cut too short and it exposes that soil, you kind of mentioned those weed seeds get down in there and germinate. Whereas if you keep your lawn that 3.5 or 4 inches and you get a nice healthy lawn going, those weeds aren't going to have a chance to germinate. But I think some people need to look at if their soil healthy, and if it's not healthy, you know, thatch it, maybe spread a little compost. There are some organic fertilizers that are like a 414 or a 325, so they're not zero phosphate because some of them are made using alfalfa products, so they're not going to have that, but they're very, very low. And some of these are OMRI certified or the organic listed, and, you know, there are the healthy alternatives to it. But it's going to take, you know, you're not going to have that perfect-looking lawn in 2 months, you know, it's a long-term thing. But once you get the soil healthy, you're going to see that lawn is just going to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you hit on a very good point, thank you, with the short mowing heights, because there are weed seeds inherently throughout soil, thousands of weed seeds in a handful of soil. And so anytime that soil is exposed because we're cutting the grass too short, some of those weed seeds are going to germinate, and some of them will remain dormant and germinate later on if we keep cutting it short. So, you know, I think that's a very important question to keep in mind there. In terms of soil microbiology, you know, we really don't know very much about it. But what we are finding out is that the soil is a tremendously diverse place of microbes, bacteria, fungi, actinomycetes, and their populations shift over time in response to temperature and moisture and things like that. And so even when we've gone into these sand-based putting greens where we take straight sand, Larry, and we might mix a little bit of peat in there, within 3 to 4 weeks of growing grass in there, we have a thriving, vibrant microbial community. Nature knows no bounds. Yep. Nature will find a way. It is an incredible thing. Thank you.
Thanks, Gene, for calling. Appreciate it very much. And Warren in Eau Claire, we'll go to you next. Hi, Warren.
Good morning or good afternoon. Thank you for the program.
Sure.
I would like to get some information on a product called Zoysia grass.
Zoysia grass.
Zoysia. We get these ads in the paper that says it's just about perfect.
No.
My father-in-law farms in southern Ohio, and he sends me those ads every year thinking he's got something new and great, the amazing Amazoy.
Mm-hmm.
Zoysia grass is a warm-season grass. It grows very well at temperatures of 90 to 100 degrees.
Okay.
At temperatures less than 60 degrees, it turns brown. And that means in Wisconsin, it tends to be green June, July, and August. And so the ads will say, plant the Zoysia grass. You won't have to mow it. You won't have to fertilize it. You won't have to water it. And it's because it's not growing.
Don't plant it.
So if you're out there and your lawn is still brown and you bought your house this winter, chances are somebody had installed a Zoysia grass lawn and then decided to sell it during the winter when it was snow covered. It is a decent grass if you live in the right part of the country. We don't live in the right part of the country. The only utility it has here in Wisconsin is if somebody has a second house or something like that they don't want to maintain the yard at, they can go ahead and plant the Zoysia grass because it'll only be green those 3 months.
Very good.
All right.
I sure appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Ted in Toma, we'll go to you. Hi, Ted.
Hey, how you doing? I thought I had the wrong number. It didn't sound like Jim Thacker. But anyway, I got something kind of unique on my front lawn. They're what we call them crop circles. It's kind of a joke. But and everybody that comes over says, what's with these circles?
Ah.
I'm saying they're like 4 or 5 feet in diameter.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the ring on it is probably, five, six inches wide.
Yep.
Yeah, we know exactly what you're talking about.
Darker green?
Oh, yeah, and especially if the lawn gets kind of brown, those will stay really green.
Yep, that's right. So we call that fairy ring when it happens on turf. And it gets its name fairy ring because the fairies dance around in a circle at night. Okay, what we do know about it from a scientific standpoint is that there's bacteria or fungi in that lawn that are consuming organic matter in that lawn. Maybe it's an old tree stump that's down there or something. And that's why it's in a circle, because they'll radiate out from the old tree stump or whatever. And then as they decompose that organic matter, it releases nitrogen and the grass grows darker green in there.
And so that's
what it is. There's really nothing to do about it.
They'll go away eventually.
They'll go away eventually. In my lawn, which was built in an old forest, I can dig up the stumps and get rid of them that way. Usually I just let them decompose and then fill in the holes as the stumps disintegrate.
That makes the most sense to me. Thanks, Ted. And John, thanks to you.
Thank you, Larry. Very enjoyable. Good questions today.
Lots of good questions. John Steyer from the UW-Madison. He's a UW Extension lawn and turf expert here in the Department of Horticulture. Glad to have him along, and we'll have him back and do this again with him. Coming up on Monday, Sue Nitzke, a professor of nutritional sciences, UW Extension nutritional scientist, will be our guest to talk about the nutritional values of those new fortified beverages that you're seeing. We're seeing them, and my wife's bought a few, and we've tried them, and I'm wondering, what about their value? We'll find out. Also, our weather guys, John Martin and Steve Ackerman, will be along to talk weather with us. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.